Okay, so today I want to talk about bearing witness. Has anybody noticed that there's an election going on? Is anybody aware of stresses and strains about that? Yeah. So what I want to talk about is how we respond when we're deeply challenged about what's happening in our world, and how we respond with energy and vigor and goodwill without righteousness or anger. It's important to us that, for one thing, it's important for us that this sendo be a welcoming space to everyone, that we are never tied to some political vision or another, that we want everyone to come here and face their own minds and hearts and find a way forward, no matter their personal beliefs. So we have to make that a part of our being. That doesn't mean that we don't hold strong beliefs and advocate for them and work for them and address suffering. But it does mean that we have to kind of tackle this question of, well, how do we do that? How do we actually embody this flexible, open mind? How do we respond? The other thing that's very much kind of close to my heart is what's happening at Standing Rock in North Dakota. And so I thought I'd talk a little bit about that. This is a very intense confrontation. For those of you, is everybody familiar with what's going on there? Mm-hmm. This pipeline that's going to be built. Mm-hmm. Hi, Raul, come in. Is there a chair? Yes.
Your bench is over there. Yeah.
So this is a $37 billion pipeline that is going to pass a half a mile north of the land of the Sioux. What's called a reservation. Okay, so we'll just use that language, reservation. On private property that became private to current owners by betraying a treaty that had been made with the Sioux. So this is their sacred land that they made a treaty to hang on to many years ago, and then, like most of the treaties with indigenous peoples, it was reneged on. So this pipeline was supposed to go very near Bismarck, North Dakota. And then they decided that it was too dangerous for the water supply of the people in Bismarck, North Dakota. So they changed it and they moved it to the water supply of the native peoples. Okay? It started, by all accounts, with a few people praying for help on the land, and help came, people came. So there are now thousands of people there. Some of our Dharma sisters and brothers are going in support. Many other clergy are going in support, and many peoples from various tribes, various groups. And it's a peaceful protest, by all accounts, on the sides of the protesters. As some of you may know, they've brought in the National Guard. First there were private guards, and there's the National Guard, local police, police from Greater, with dogs and rubber bullets and pepper spray. Things could be done about it politically with a stroke of a pen, and that hasn't happened. So, what do we do? How do we respond to something like this? How do we even pay attention to something like this? Without dividing the world up into camps of one camp and another camp. Good people and bad people. Smart people and stupid people. Right? How much have you heard in this election world about stupid people? How could they believe that? On both sides, right? How could they believe that? How could they do that? How could they think that? This is so easy for us to move into. Either that or just, you know, pull the covers over our heads and say, I don't want to see. I don't want to look. I don't want to know. But that's not really an option for us in our daily lives. We don't have to look far in our beautiful little town to see inequity and suffering. We don't have to look very far at all. In fact, I would guess we don't have to look outside of this room. Suffering is visible and invisible, right? When we hear things, we want to respond. That's our way. That's the Bodhisattva way, but how? How do we practice in these circumstances without creating more suffering through, you know, in the Christian tradition, and I get involved with people talking about this, there's this sense of righteous anger, the righteousness of the prophet being prophetic, being and there's and justice and, you know, rights, and there's a lot of vigor in that, and it's worth paying attention to. But our way is what Bernie Glassman calls bearing witness. So Bernie Glassman, Roshi, was the founder of the Zen Peacemaker Order. He's a disciple of Taizen Mizumi Roshi's. And he has a lot to say on this. And a lot to teach us about how to respond. And so the Zen Peacemaker Order has three basic principles that they work from. Number one, penetrating the unknown by letting go of our fixed ideas. Penetrating the unknown by letting go of our fixed ideas. So when we think we know what's right, when we think those people, blah, 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 this teaching says, stop for a moment. Allow the unknown to be present for you by letting go of your fixed ideas. The second is bearing witness to joy and suffering. And I'll say a little more about what that means. And then the third is healing ourselves and others. So these are the three principles. Penetrating the unknown by letting go of our fixed ideas. Bearing witness to joy and suffering. And healing ourselves and others. So Bernie Glassman and his students and followers and disciples do a number of things. It's very much a socially engaged group of people. And two of the things they're known for are their street retreats, where they do sesshin on the streets. And they've also regularly go to Auschwitz and sit there. So this has been a powerful, these ways of letting go of fixed ideas and being present for what's happening, bearing witness, and through that healing, heaven on the ground and in the places where it occurs, not an abstraction. That's kind of a hallmark of their way. He talks about how when you're present for great suffering, it's not hard to let go of fixed ideas because it's overwhelming. When you're really present for what's happening, you can't grasp on to fixed ideas. You might do it a moment later, but in the presence of great suffering, there are no fixed ideas. They're not even thought. There's just this. But we have to name, too. We need to call out the name. We need to say the words that we can find. Because in naming, we make real, we bring things into our lives, right? We bring things into our reality. So there's this dialogue between not knowing and bearing witness. Part of that is naming. One of the Americans that went on one of the retreats said about bearing witness, his name is Peter Grotz, "You can have seen what you've seen and never bear a witness. You can see the whole world and never have witnessed anything. Only when what you see becomes significant to someone, to yourself, for instance, do you become a witness." Okay, so let me read that again. "You can have seen what you've seen and never bear witness. You can see the whole world and never have witnessed anything. Only when what you see becomes significant to someone, to yourself, for instance, do you become a witness." So there's a difference between just kind of like being around something and bearing witness. Bernie says, "When we bear witness to a situation, we become each and every aspect of that situation. There is no separation between us and what's happening or has happened. There is also no separation between, there is no separation between any of us. We ourselves as individuals with our identities and ego structures disappears. When we bear witness, we are nothing other but all the elements of a situation." Thich Nhat Hanh talks about this too. When we actually bear witness to a situation, we don't separate ourselves between the good people and the bad people, or the right people or the wrong people. We don't do that. We're willing, we're awake to the fact that we are all of it. Who we are fundamentally is all of it, and that's bearing witness. That's naming. He says, "It is not an act of will, it is an act of letting go. What we let go of is the concept of the person we think we are. It's why we start from unknowing. Only then can we become all the voices of the universe. Those that suffer, those that inflict suffering, those that stand idly by. For we are all these people. We are the universe. That's really challenging, isn't it? I mean, I can think of people, especially right now in election time or hearing about what's happening at Standing Rock. I can think of people, I think, me? Is that me? But that's exactly what he's saying. That's exactly what bearing witness is being willing to be all of it and not retreat to a righteous stance that says, oh, those people or that action. That's they're evil or bad or... And we can say that. See, that's the thing, is we have to be able to say no. No, I'm going to put my body on the line. I do not want this pipeline to go through the sacred land of the Sioux and one more time destroy Native culture. No. I do not want that to happen. I have a preference about who's elected president of these United States. I care about it. But where does that bleed over into hatred, righteousness, kind of this? Where does an effective, wise, Fudo-esque look at the situation that has vitality and strength and clarity to it shift over into those bad people, that awful, right? And what do we lose in there? We lose our souls in a way. We lose our connection to life. I think this is one of the reasons why Bernie cares so much about this. One of our chants, as he translates it, attention, attention, raising the mind of compassion, the supreme meal is offered to all the hungry ghosts throughout space and time, filling the smallest particle in the largest space. Attention, attention, bear witness. And as he points out, that can't happen if we stay away from pain and suffering. It can't happen if we meet something and then we're like, okay, that's enough. I'm going to go have a latte and... So, but what's the difference between that and taking care of ourselves? It's a very interesting question. If you stay a while, you'll hear the voices. You'll hear the suffering. You'll hear the struggle. And when you hear the complexity of a situation, then you have the option of acting from a Buddha heart. You have the opportunity to respond with generosity. He says, if I bear witness, I become all the voices. Then it is myself that I am forgiving and no one else. Then it makes no sense to stay in the place of blame and guilt or anger and accusation. When I begin to see all parts as me, I begin to take care of the situation. So this is bearing witness. This is being present. He notes that if we get stuck in anger and in guilt, then we're paralyzed. We can't act. So we return to this again and again, and we return to these principles of penetrating the unknown by letting go of fixed ideas, bearing witness to joy and suffering, and healing ourselves and others. This is healing, isn't it? It's bearing witness. It's healing. So, in what... What Bernie Glassman is describing is a moving forward in a way right? Moving forward into a situation, allowing yourselves to be touched by a situation, bearing witness, and then acting for the benefit of the whole situation, and thereby healing oneself and others. To do this, we have to keep a good heart, right? We have to keep a good heart. We have to stay connected to what's flourishing, what's most true. We have to sustain joy. We have to do these things and not succumb to despair and anger. The goodness of the world is also a part of the world, right? The generosity, the actions. So I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about how Paula Arai's work with Japanese women, contemporary women, and one of them talked about healing, and she talked about watching the clouds was good nutrition for my heart. Watching the clouds is good nutrition for my heart. And another talked about maintaining a positive orientation by saying thank you at night for the day she lived, and saying thank you in the morning for the day ahead. So saying, genuinely saying thank you at night for the day we've lived and all we've been given, and in the morning for the day ahead, that is not the action of overwhelm or despair or, you know, being swamped by suffering, is it? It's a totally different, you know, and we're not talking about doing this from the from your private jet while you're eating, you know, while you're drinking coffee that costs, you know, $5,000 a cup or something. We saw something on this the other night. It's truly amazing. This is like in the midst of hardship. That's one of the moving things about these women, is that they're not rich, they're not powerful. They've lived through difficulty. And yet, through that, this practice comes up of saying thank you at night, thank you in the morning, not just because it's the right thing to do or it's a good thing to do, because it's an intelligent thing to do. It transforms our life and allows us to bear witness, to allow not knowing, and to heal. It's not a, you know, it's not a big deal. It's a pretty simple action. It's a very powerful action. So, sustaining ourselves is sustaining the way. We're going to clean our homes anyway. Why not enjoy it? You know? We're going to eat anyway. Why not express gratitude before we do it? This way we take responsibility for our lives, and no matter what. So this is refuge. Yeah. So we open to suffering, we respond, we do it with a good heart, and we do it knowing that serenity, the Buddha's eyes, are available to us all the time, even when we don't feel it. So I found this, I had to clean up my desk at work because we had this big 10-year anniversary. All the people were going to be coming through the building and looking at our offices, which in my case is kind of scary. And piles of stuff I hadn't looked at in 2 years. Anyway, I found this calendar that someone had given me, and one of the months, it has a little wood block of monks, and one of the, with little verses underneath it, and this verse was by Shinran. It said, "My eyes being hindered by blind passions, I cannot perceive the light that grasps me. Yet the great compassion without tiring illumines me always." So even when, you know, we have blind passions, like hatred, anger, greed, all this stuff, Dogen says, that too is Buddha. Yeah. But Shinran is saying, My eyes being hindered by blind passions, I cannot perceive the light that grasps me. Yet the great compassion without tiring illumines me always. So there's always serenity is always available to us. You know, but we may not feel it. And that's okay. That doesn't mean it's not there. So we go about cultivating a mind and heart that with eyes that are not fooled by the inevitable blind passions, by the ways in which we divide up the world. Say, oh, God, really? Those people are going to vote for whom? Those people, right? Or seeing, you know, representations of what's going on at Standing Rock. With, really? They're going to move the pipeline from Bismarck to a Native people's land? Really? They brought the pepper spray and the dogs to meet people with no weapons? Really? You know, you can feel it, right? Judgment. I can. But that's not our way. That's blind passions. That actually obscures our true response, which is letting go of fixed ideas, bearing witness, and healing. Those are the ones that we return to. Thank you.